Technology is a good, it's helpful in many ways, but if you lean more heavily on technology than you do on paper and pen, you might be falling into the trap of your kids not doing as well. So one thing for teachers is fine, use technology, but don't rely on technology. Use it as a secondary means.
Family life is essential. Jim and I are on a mission to help you live the best one. You'll hear personal stories from thought leaders of strengths and struggles with proven strategies to help you make the most of your 18 summers. I'm your co-host, Jamie Shields.
Welcome 18 Summers Tribe and Community. We're excited to be here with you today. Today, we have a very special guest that really shares some strong core values with us, and I know our community is going to resonate with him, and especially the message that he's bringing out. Tom Kirsting is a family therapist, the author of the best-selling book, Disconnected, How to Reconnect Our Digitally Distracted Kids. He appears regularly on national television and other media, offering insight and advice about parenting, relationships, and wellness. He's lectured throughout the country and is the founder of the Valley Family Counseling Center in New Jersey. And Tom has a new book coming out.
We won't hold that against him.
We won't, because I'm a Jersey boy as well. Tom is coming out with a new book on August 4th, Disconnected, How to Protect Your Kids Against the Harmful Effects of Device Dependency. And again, this is something we hold very close to our heart, Tom. We have four children ranging from 3 to 16. This is such an important message that we talk about all the time.
Yeah, so welcome. We're really glad to have you here.
Yeah, me too. Thanks so much.
Yeah. Why did you write the book Disconnected?
So I'll tell you real quick. So I worked in a public high school for 25 years. I just retired, actually. I took an early retirement. I didn't have the age yet. And I've also had a private practice for 20. So I was, working with the school and then coming here. So 2009 is when it started. We started getting an influx of teenagers that had been diagnosed with attention deficit disorder. And that was around 2009. And I'd never seen that before, because if you know anything about ADHD, the average age of diagnosis is age 8. And if you have a child with ADHD, you can't not notice it by age 5. So we had all these kids coming into our committee I had at the high school with ADHD, looking for accommodations, and it was like one after the next, all of a sudden. So I knew something was up, and I felt like I was kind of on my own island, like questioning what's happening. Yeah, these kids have all the symptoms, but there's no way you just get ADHD when you're 14, especially in a school district like the one I worked at, which is a real high-performing school district. So that led me to start researching. I came across a lot of information about something called acquired ADHD, which is an official term. But essentially, going back to 2009, the amount of screen time that kids were absorbing even then was about 7.5 hours a day. And I came across research on brain neuroplasticity. And essentially what that is, starting then, is that kids' brains were adapting to the highly stimulating world of technology and sort of unadapting to the natural habitat of focus, concentration, listening, social skills, and so forth. Wow. So that's how I got into it. I started lecturing, believe it or not, in 2009, that many years ago. And after doing so many lectures all over the place and doing a lot of media, I knew I had to get cast a wider web to reach people. So that's when I wrote the original Disconnected. I self-published it. And then the book did so well that a major publisher picked up the rights to it. And the second edition is now coming out on August 4th. And I'm happy about that, because this gives me an opportunity to have a much larger reach, because the message when people read this book is just a big, big sort of slap in the face for parents in a good way.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I've read some of your stuff too. It's funny where you've mentioned that in a nice way, that the parents are hypocritical. It's that leadership starts with us, but normally we're almost setting that tone.
Well, it is, and some of the tips is, the book has tons of different tips, because people always, what kind of strategies and tips do you have? And, the first most important tip is this. We, the parents, we have to practice what we preach. Right now, depending on the research you look at, the average kid is spending roughly 9 hours a day in front of a screen, and the average adult is spending slightly more than that. So it's crazy the amount of them. And even like with this whole coronavirus thing, I have two kids. My son just turned 17. My daughter's 13. And I'm like the tech czar, and it's still a problem, even in my house. You know what I'm saying? So it's, I can imagine what it's like, and I know what it's like out there in most families.
Yeah. Because people are going to say, what do we do? We have an awareness now. We want to do something. Are there some simple strategies that are you know, easy to understand and really apply? Like, what would you recommend the top two or three things to see?
The number one thing that I write about in the book and I talk about is something called social conformity. So if I had an audience in front of me right now of 200 or 300 people, and I said, raise your hand if you think it is smart for an 11-year-old to have a smartphone. All right. Never once has anybody raised their hand. Everybody agrees it's not a very good idea. Yet, the average age of first smartphone issuance is 10.3 years old. So all the people that think it's a bad idea, most of their kids have that. And that's a conformity type of thing. What we tend to do as human beings is we go with the flow, we follow the social norm, we fear that our kids are going to get left out, and then we kind of sort of give in to the social norm. We conform to it. So I try to explain to parents that you have to really, number one, you know, stick to your rules, stick to what you believe in. You know, don't let society and your neighbors and your kids' friends determine, you know, what is right and what is a good thing and what is a bad thing. That's number one. Number two, like I just mentioned, is practice what you preach. And a couple of other things that I think very simple things that are very important is this. Any kind of electronic device should never be in a child's bedroom at all. Because I see this trend now, particularly with teenagers, where they're living every second of their day in their bedroom. So I tell parents, you got to get the kids out of the bedroom and into the family room with us. That's an important topic. Two other quick things. Send your kid to school without the phone. The phone is, I worked in education for 25 years. The phone does nothing but distract kids during the school day. I know it's easier, you know, picking up your kids from practice to have the phone, this and that, but it is nothing but a distraction. You know, when they're a little older, fine. You know, later in high school, okay. But younger kids, no. Next, if your kid plays video games, very simple rules. Just do not allow video games during the school week, because what will happen then, and I have many parents will say, well, you know, my kid's doing well in school. What's the big deal? He's done with his homework. They fall into that trap. And now all of a sudden, when they know they can play video games, you know, after school, that's all they're thinking about. So they're racing through their homework. They're studying minimally just to get to the video games. If it's not there, they're going to hone in more academically and do better in school and have better social skills and everything else.
Absolutely. And along those same lines, you mentioned it earlier about how, you know, children were consuming about 9 hours a day of the tech. I wonder how that compares to the average amount of hours children are sleeping each day.
Well, very, very, very good point, because I'm glad you brought that up, because there's so much stuff I forget about.
You probably had some good info on that.
Oh, I do. All right, here's the deal. All right. And when I'm lecturing, I talk about this too. We have a sleep deprivation problem among our nation's youth right now. A lot of people don't know that. Sleep centers are bursting through the seams. So at the tail end of my career at the high school, for about 2 years, I questioned several hundred kids in my office that trusted me, right? And I just said, listen, be honest with me. What time do you go to sleep during the school week? And these were kids that were very frank and very honest. And almost all of them would tell me that they go to sleep between 1 and 4 a.m. every night of the school week. So, and now what happens is you have kids that are exhausted. They're coming into school. That contributes to everything. Like I talk about the anxiety disorder epidemic, the depression, all tied to social media and a superficial nature that kids are marinating in all day long. Just the sleep part alone, that element by itself will trigger anxiety, will trigger other mental and emotional health issues and so forth. So it is a major, major problem. And here's the tip for parents. I go back to tip number one. Your kids should not have their devices in their bedroom. Most, you know, teenagers, young to old teenagers, are allowed to keep them in their bedroom and sleep with them. And they stay in their room with them. And these kids tell me, and they tell me point blank, that when their parents think they are sleeping, they're sneaking back on their phone and they're up till 1 or 2, 2 or 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning doing Snapchat, YouTube, and everything else.
Yeah, we have that simple rule of no phones in the bedroom. You know, yeah.
They're not even allowed to plug anything in at night. I'm like, electricity's dirty. I'm kind of like the far end of this, but definitely no phones. I was wondering too, when you mentioned, you know, the anxiety disorder and sleep disorders, are you also seeing children exhibiting signs of PTSD because of what's happening with electronics and lack of sleep? Have you seen any of that?
Well, not necessarily PTSD, but definitely, you know, which falls under the anxiety disorder spectrum, but definitely generalized anxiety, definitely panic disorder and so forth. And I laid that out in the first book before the researchers came out and tied, you know, tech to anxiety. And I anecdotally explained it, and it kind of, you know, it kind of goes like this. You take a 12 or 13 year old that's in the most trying time of their life called adolescence, where they're changing physiologically, their voice is changing hormonally, they're going through puberty. And basically, you know, adolescence, when you just take that one word, if I could give it a one word definition, I would use the word insecure. That's what comes with territory. You're automatically insecure. You're trying to figure out who you are, where you fit in, you know, in the social pecking order. And now you throw the big movie screen of every one of their peers' lives in their face all day long, the highlight reel.
The highlight.
Yeah.
Constantly comparing themselves. And they're falling behind because they're, you know, because they're spending so much time viewing the profiles of their peers. They want to fit in. They want to get likes. So it's compromising their self-esteems, their self-worth, and so forth, because they're trying to extract feeling good from the outside world. It don't work that way. It's an inside-out thing, feeling good. And, you know, and you complicate the sleep issues, the falling behind in school, and it's just the perfect storm for the emotions of anxiety to start setting in. I have the amount of anxiety disorders that I have dealt with going back, starting about 2 or 3 years ago. I had, starting at that point, I've had more referrals for middle school age kids, about twice as many in a 1 year period than I had in a 15 year period combined. And at the high school, when I was working at the high school, that was the number one problem we dealt with on a daily basis, with kids having major, I'd get more calls from the nurse's office in a week to have to calm down a kid that was in a major emotionally compromised state. Starting about 2 or 3 years ago, I got more of those calls per week than I got my entire career collectively before that.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And everything just ties to this, them living in this world. I mean, you know, the way the brain works, you know, as human beings, you know, that's why we're called human beings. We're supposed to be here, you know, in this world, but our kids are trapped in this cyber superficial world. They're adapting to that, and as a result, they're unadapting to the real world.
Now, you mentioned at home setting these like tech values. You know, I think it might be what I surmised that you might call them. You know, just your boundaries around tech and some rules and things in which, you know, you can lead by. How do you think, since you're a parent and you've been in the school system, how do we can support our children at school? Like for the educators that might be listening to us, or for parents choosing maybe where they'll be sending their children, like how can we best support our children other than just not sending the phones to school? Is there anything that you've seen work well? Like, have you gone and spoken in schools or worked directly with principals or administrators?
Oh yeah, I've done all of the above. You know, and one of the pressures right now, which I look at as another conformity, is that schools, at least up here in New Jersey, all of them are now one-to-one. Every kid gets their own computer and so forth, right? And it's happening all across the country. And in my new book, which I didn't have in the first book, I lay out a lot of research that I found about computer-based learning in schools. And it shows that schools that lean heavily on technology, the kids actually do worse academically, test scores and everything else.
Great.
You know, it's because they're getting distracted, you know, while they're in the classroom. So one thing that I when I do teacher trainings and so forth, or for school, for the administrators and the teachers and so forth, is to, you know, a lot of schools are already doing this. You put like one of those shoe bags on the back door where kids can put their phones in. You know, teachers, I explain to them, technology is a good, it's helpful in many ways, but if you lean more heavily on technology than you do on paper and pen, you might be falling into the trap of your kids not doing as well. So one thing for teachers is fine, use technology, but don't rely on technology. Use it as secondary mean. And then going back to also, you know, the not sending kids to school with phones. Now here's where schools, I predict, are going to get tied up in the near future. And that's why I wish they would contact me and have me consult for them. The American Psychological Association, which puts out something called the DSM guide. It's the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual that therapists and psychologists have to use, where they have all the diagnostic codes for mental health issues. What's been on their radar for several years now is something called screen addictive disorder. So, you know, I can make the case that at least 50% kids fit the criteria for addiction when it comes to technology, but the American Psychological Association, obviously they're getting strong armed by the tech industry to not put it in there. Because if all of a sudden that was in there as a diagnosis, the World Health Organization 2 years ago came out with a diagnosis called gaming disorder. So it's now classifiable illness, gaming addiction.
Wow.
Now screen addiction disorder gets in there, and it might, who knows, but there's a lot of, you know, political pressure and so forth from the outside that's preventing that. If screen disorder gets in there and all of a sudden half the kids in a school have that diagnosis, schools will not be able to give those kids computers to use. And they're going to have to find an old school means of educating kids.
Yeah.
Real quick, while we're on the topic, sorry, I can go on and on.
No, I love this stuff. We love this. This is our audience important too.
Yeah.
So right, there is a Waldorf school in Silicon Valley, California. You probably heard about this. Where
Jamie used to run a Waldorf school. So you're like, you just perked your ears right up.
Oh yeah, yeah. I saw the body language. which is good, which is what makes Zoom a good thing. So there's a Waldorf school in Silicon Valley, California, where there are no computers at all. It's all old school pen and paper learning. That's it. They won't allow it. And 70% of the students in that school are the sons and daughters of Silicon Valley tech executives. So what does that tell you?
Interesting. What does that tell you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Tom, I know what people are going to ask right now, though. Okay, screen addiction. I believe in it. I believe I've suffered from it. When I get nervous or worked up, I'll jump on
the phone.
That's
the first thing he does. It's really interesting.
I literally will take a phone and put it in my computer bag and put it in the front hall closet in the back so I can't get to it. So it's not that quick thing. But people are going to say, well, how do I recognize screen addiction in myself? How do I recognize it in my children? Is there like signs of...
Yeah, well, the signs... You know, the signs are really not much different than somebody that's addicted to drugs or alcohol. So if you're, and it's basically four criteria. If whatever it is that you're doing, a screen or booze, if it's affecting your interpersonal life with your family, that's a potential warning sign there. If it's affecting your occupation, your job, and in this case with kids, academics, we know there's a problem that could fit under the criteria of addiction. If it's affecting your health, and with kids right now, we have that. We have the mental health, the anxiety, we have the suicide rate through the roof, we have the sleep disorder, which is affecting health, obesity, and everything else. And if there's been any legal consequences, and we see that a lot too, with kids getting tangled up, sending out, photos that are inappropriate and things of that nature. So if any of those moving parts are happening, any one of those, then you can theoretically meet the criteria of addiction. But again, it's not quite out there yet, the term addiction with tech, because of what I mentioned earlier. But just keep that in mind. So if you're up late and you're sleep deprived, or you can't focus anymore at your job, or you're having problems with your spouse and you're not connecting because you're downstairs and she's upstairs all the time, those are the warning signs that it's time to kind of, to power down the devices and to power up our relationships.
Love it. It's so true. I mean, every single one of those, hits home. Like you said, we've dealt with addiction and stuff through different family members, but that really, it can be blanketed right over the same thing.
If you take a kid, here's another example. I've dealt with this countless times where the parent will call me up for an appointment and say, my 13-year-old son, I'd like for him to meet with you. We're having some issues here. And this 13-year-old boy is the nicest, kindest kid you'll ever meet. And if you talk to his teachers, he's like the greatest kid in school, nothing wrong. But then you're on the phone with the parent, and the parent tells you that the kid's got a dozen holes in his bedroom wall because every time they've taken the phone away or the Xbox away, the kid loses it. So
that was a question, actually. I was wondering what you're seeing when that withdrawal happens.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's unbelievable, the amount of stuff I've seen. I had a kid a few years ago, total tech addict, hadn't been to school in a year. He was a gaming addict. Parents come in, and I knew right off the bat, I there was nothing I could do for the kid. I had to empower the parents, and they just didn't want to do what they know they needed to do, which was to take the Xbox away because they knew what the reaction was going to be. So finally, dad pulls the trigger after a few weeks, takes the Xbox away, texts me and says, I feel great. Then I get a frantic call about 2 hours later that the son went berserk, took his dad's $3,500 Fender guitar, took a knife out of the drawer, put the knife to the guitar strings, and threatened to cut the guitar strings if his dad didn't give him back his Xbox. So if that reaction, you look at the reaction of that, that's classic. It's like taking crack from a crack addict.
Yeah. It almost reminds me of like Gollum and the ring from Lord of the Rings, at all costs, let me protect this, Yeah. And that's something scary.
Yeah.
I think a question that's come up, Tom, and this will be an opinion one. Do you think tech did more good for us in coronavirus than bad?
So people are going to, the assumption would be, and here's, let me frame that for you. So when I'm doing my lectures, I tell the audience, I'll say, guess what? Technology is actually a good thing.
Right. Yeah.
There is nothing wrong with technology, right? It's fine. Having a glass of wine with dinner is fine. having 9 glasses of wine with dinner 7 nights a week is a problem. Yep. So it's not the tech itself. It's the incessant 9 hours a day of using it that is the problem. And that's what we got to get a handle on. So to answer your question, I think it's a 50-50 thing. I think the tech has been very, very helpful, depending on the kid, for example, at school, where they're able to, you know, do their schooling from home. It's been very good for my kids, to be honest with you. But they're definitely spending more time with my own kids right now because they're home and they can't see their friends and so forth. So it has its good attributes. The bad things, the things that I'm worrying about are those kids that were teeter-tottering on, you know, compulsive tech use now. During this whole quarantine, have they now crossed the line and could be classified as, you know, as addictive? Yeah. So that's what I'm worried about. When some of these kids come out of this coronavirus, you know, what's going to happen? You know, what's going to happen come August and September when they go back to school? Is that old norm now going to feel weird because there's a new norm that's replaced it?
Yeah. And it's probably important that as summer actually starts, that, and this is what we've said to parents, is look, what happened, you know, we were all thrown, work was thrown at home, school was thrown at home, family, everything was happening from home. You might've gone up in the tech, but now maybe take a step back, take a deep breath and pull in the reins a little more, you know, because what our concern is parents are going to let this end of school year pandemic run right through summer. And then all of a sudden, like you said, day after Labor Day, it's ingrained even more.
Yeah. I've looked at this whole lockdown, and I'm up in New Jersey, so we're still locked down for the most part. People are starting to kind of go do things now. They're finally saying, all right, you know what, enough is enough here. But I've looked at it personally, and I've counseled other people as an opportunity, because a lot of people, now that there's downtime, they don't know what to do with that. So downtime is really like the miracle grow for our mind and emotions, right?
Yeah, Jamie always says boredom is a gift. Yeah, that's her Waldorf background.
It is boredom, you know, and that's the problem. Today's kids don't know what boredom is. You know, like when I was a kid, we were bored. We'd be creative. Our creative minds would kick in. But when we're distracted all the time, essentially what we've done is we've distracted ourselves from self. So teaching kids how to be mindful, or even ourselves, on how to sit in silence and embrace that, it's very, very frightening for many people because they don't know who they are. But delving inward and you know, creating a routine of attitude of gratitude, using visualization, you know, seeing yourself accomplishing what you want to accomplish, and just being getting in touch and getting to know what lies deep within us, it's a perfect opportunity. But most people don't know about this. And most people, if they attempt this, they go into a frenzy because they're not used to this kind of diving inward, the inside out work. That is what I look at mental health. Yeah, you know, everybody, mental health is sort of looked at as a damage control thing. Let's fix this. I've always looked at it as a proactive measure, like where we could really bolster our mental health by sitting in silence, by meditating, by being mindful. But we don't teach much of that out there. You know, it's a way of strengthening our mental health. But now we're just kind of trying to fix, you know, the skid marks, the results of what has happened from being distracted from ourselves all the time.
So with that, I'm wondering, your 75-year-old self, we always like to end with a, you know, 75-year-old self. When you're going inward, when you're having those moments of boredom, do you think you could tap into that older, wiser self many years from now? Like Jim always says, hopefully you still have, it doesn't sound the same coming from me.
Hopefully I still have some hair. Hopefully I'm still surfing and, you know, with friends and family.
So I'm 74 now. So in another number.
Looking great.
Yeah, my father's 74. So I could see myself when I'm 75 years old, which is like, what am I going to be, 48 in a couple of weeks. So I see myself when I'm 75 years old saying to people, parents, kids, I wish you could have been raised in the 1980s like me.
Oh, wow. It
was nothing. I mean, I had such, all I did was have, I look back at my childhood and I say, God, was that great. Riding our BMX bikes all over the place, listening to Van Halen, having a great time, not a care in the world. Our parents couldn't get us back in the house. And now you can't get kids out of the house. And that's what I would try to preach to people is, you know, get your kids out there. You know, get them out of that house. Kids that go to camp, I get a lot of them. They go to summer camp. Every one of them will tell me the best part of summer camp, sleepaway summer camp, was not having their phone.
Yeah.
You never think they'd hear that. But when they have 7 weeks of not having their phone, what happens is they get a dose of something that they didn't know they were craving. And with that thing they were craving was all along that they weren't aware of is the social emotional connection with other human beings that they've established.
Yeah. And you don't see the block until it's taken away.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So oh, I love that. That's a good one. And I was that 80s kid, probably only a few neighborhoods over from you doing the same thing.
Oh yeah.
And the final whistle you'd hear to come in for dinner and you're like, oh, already. And,
No, yeah, we had the 6 o'clock whistle. The thing was like, you know, you have to cover your ears, I think.
And we only had about 6 channels, so it was like.
The whistle was my mother. My mother out the front door, Tommy, Joey, Carrie, Peggy, time for dinner. And bang, no matter what we were doing, we'd have to, you know.
That was it. Well, I love your values. And I know for the book, it's coming out August 4th, right? And
yes, August 4th.
What will that add on from Disconnected? Kind of what will be brought into light besides the principles in Disconnected?
Say it one more time.
What's going to be the add-ins to the new book?
Oh, so the new book, so it's the second edition. So what I've added in there is a new chapter on computer-based learning and what's happening in school districts, another around America. I go into I go more in depth into 5G and the tech industry and the actual all the countless peer-reviewed studies showing the tumors and the physiological damage from. You know, from the radiation exposure from smartphones and cell towers and everything else. And then I have in each chapter, I have a number of different tips at the end of each chapter, you know, because that's what people are always asking for is some tips. And just a lot of new updated content. Now I have some research that I cite, you know, supporting my old anecdotal research, things of that nature. I go into bullying. I didn't really go much into cyberbullying. I go into that a little bit now in the new book. Yeah.
Well, where can we find the book when it comes out, and where can we find you if we want to learn more about you? And
yeah, so the book is going to be everywhere you can get a book. Bookstores, Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, and then me, it's just my website, TomKirsting.com. You know, I'm always reachable. If anybody emails me, I email everybody back.
Oh, wonderful!
We have a lot of families in our community that are very concerned with this, and I think it's something. The good thing is it's starting to come out in the open, Tom. Everyone's saying. No one's perfect at this.
We all struggle.
So yeah. We have to keep striving to work for it. So we'll definitely make sure that we keep our tribe abreast to the book launch, to Disconnected that's available now, and to your services, because I think what you're doing is super important. So I want to say thank you as a dad. You know,
I appreciate it. Book's available for pre-order now, so people can order.
Oh, it is. Good. Well, then we're going to be ordering a few copies for sure.
And where?
You guys available. It's on Amazon. I know it's on Amazon. It's probably on Barnes & Noble. Right, starting in about another week or two is when the real publicity push will start taking place from the publisher. So I was down in Florida last year actually doing a lecture. I think it was called Claremont, Florida. Does that sound familiar?
Sure. Yeah, we know Claremont. It's about 2 hours from here. So not
too far.
Well, we do a family book club. Every quarter we try to read one book with our two sons. So maybe this will be our next one because this is a big subject for all of us. And the more we talk about it, the more we try to find fair ground. And that's what this is all about for the best for everyone.
100%. 100%.
Well, thank you for inspiring and for being here.
Yeah, we really appreciate
it. Man, it was really nice meeting you guys. I feel like I've known you guys for years.
I know. Yeah, so similar background. So it's cool values. To see and core values. But keep doing what you're doing, and let's definitely stay in touch. And we'll look forward to August 4th and the pre-order.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. Much appreciated.
Thanks for joining the 18 Summers podcast and putting your family in priority position. Subscribe and leave a review and help other families just like you.